So the next one is Citius Pharmaceuticals. It is a late-stage biopharmaceutical company focused on development and commercialization of first-in-class critical care products with a pipeline of anti-infectives in oncology, adjunct cancer care, stem cell therapy, and unique prescription products. Their diversified pipeline of therapies targeting unmet medical needs includes three potential first and only prescription treatments in their indications. So let's welcome Citius, which is listed on NASDAQ with a symbol of CTXR, the CEO and chairman of Citius Pharmaceutical, Leonard Mazur, to come out to share his story with us.
Gilbert, thank you for the introduction. It's a pleasure for me to join everybody today. I thank you for taking the time to participate in a meeting with us. The company is Citius Pharmaceuticals. We're NASDAQ listed CTXR. Next slide. Go to the next slide, please. So, because I'm going to be making forward-looking statements here, this is our forward-looking statement disclosure. I advise everybody to check the website ctxrpharma.com or citiuspharma.com, or go to sec.com and type in our symbol. So, as it was highlighted by Gilbert, we do have a very late-stage diversified pipeline. We're actually a biotech and a pharma company combined. Lymphir, our latest stage drug, is a purified version of an IL-2 diphtheria toxin fusion protein indicated for a very rare cancer called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It's we have a BLA filed. We have one item that has to be completed as far as that, and we should have an approval shortly on this. Mino-Lok is an antibiotic lock solution designed to be the first and only FDA-approved product to salvage infected central venous catheters that cause central line-associated bloodstream infections. And then we have Halo-Lido, which has the potential to be the first and only FDA-approved RX treatment for hemorrhoids. I know most of you will find this hard to believe, but in the United States, in the 21st century, there isn't a single FDA-approved prescription drug for the treatment of hemorrhoids. We have the over-the-counter market, as it's known here, that has products, but nothing on a prescription side. So our goal with this drug is to be able to prove its efficacy, and then we plan to out-license or monetize the drug for our shareholders. The markets that we compete in are significant. The CTCL market is a rare disease market, but it's still at 300 to 400 million with great potential in peripheral T-cell lymphoma and immuno-oncology. The CLABSI/CURBSI market, or central line associated bloodstream infection market, would be our market and our market only. Nobody else is there. So we're estimating right now that it's about $1.8 billion, almost $2 billion worldwide, half in the United States, half outside of the United States. We have $33.3 million cash as of 6:30 with a runway through August of 24. We did a $15 million registered direct offering just this past May. We did receive a complete response letter from the FDA on our PDUFA date, which we're preparing the resubmission, which will be done in January. I want to just highlight something here for you, because you won't hear this on any of your calls, and that is that management, namely myself and a co-founder of the company, we have put our own money into the company. I have $22.5 million invested directly in the company, not stock options, not warrants, direct, and the co-founder Myron Holubiak has $4 million invested directly in the company. We do have great catalysts coming up in the future, which will be the completion of our Mino-Lok phase 3 trial and a resubmission of Lymphir for a plan for the early part of 2024. So with that, could I have the next slide, please? So this is our management team. I won't go through all our backgrounds, but I just do want to highlight Dr. Myron Schuchman, our chief medical officer, 23 years experience at Roswell Park in Buffalo, a well-known cancer treatment center. He's a lymphoma specialist. He published 180 papers while he was at Roswell Park, and then he went to Celgene for 5 years as vice president in charge of lymphoma myeloma research worldwide. The rest of the team, all of us, are very experienced in our respective fields. I would like to say we have no trainees, no internships, but every single person has a heavy industry experience. Myself, I have a long-term history in the pharma industry, both on the corporate side as well as the entrepreneurial side. I've started several companies with successful exits. Myron Holubiak, the co-founder of the company, used to be the president of Roche Laboratories US. Next slide, please. So with that, just to highlight again the milestones and what we have in terms of coming up. So Lymphir, our cutaneous T-cell lymphoma drug, which we filed a BLA in September of 22, received the PDUFA date of, which is the approval date, of July 28, 2023. On that date, we received something known as a complete response letter. And what that is about is that it's about a manufacturing test. We completed the test, we passed the test, but the validation of the test wasn't completed yet, which would take longer. We thought the FDA was going to give us approval, but they chose to give us a complete response letter. That is the only part of our filing that we have to really address in terms of the resubmission. We expect an approval. Once we resubmit, the FDA will give us either a 2 month approval date or a 6 month approval date. But certainly we'll have an approval no later than June or July of 2024 or possibly earlier. We are planning to launch this drug in September of 24. Minilok is our drug for salvaging catheters. That has it's an event-driven trial. We expect to have all those events completed. Mm-hmm. We're over enrolling right now. We are virtually completed, and we'll have top line results in the first half of 2024. Our hemorrhoid drug, we just completed a phase 2B trial. We're meeting with the FDA in the first quarter to submit the data from the phase 2B trial, as well as get a phase 3 protocol worked out. Next slide, please. So next slide. So Minilok, very quickly. So this is, as I indicated, it's for catheters that are infected. And I should, everybody can see here, basically, I'm holding in my hand a catheter. And this catheter is placed surgically. It gets implanted by your collarbone, goes surgically inside to the superior vena cava of the heart, where it delivers medications, chemotherapy, nutrients. Most of the long-term central venous catheters are implanted in cancer patients. And what can happen over time, as you can see here, those catheters can get infected. About 4 million of the 7 million catheters inserted in the United States are long-term central venous catheters. Out of that, about 500,000 roughly get infected. When they're infected, it is a major problem. Today, the only standard of care is to surgically remove that catheter and surgically replace it again in another part of the body. There's a high rate of side effects, 12 to 25% associated mortality and morbidity. Next slide, please. So the problem with removing and replacing is that there's a limited availability of other vascular sites. And what can happen with the removing and replacing is you interrupt the flow of IV treatments because it takes time to do these procedures and you've got to stop it. There's also complications that arise that can be thrombotic or mechanical. The patients experience adverse events, not only physical, but also psychological. And there's a high cost here in the United States of doing remove and replace, since it's two separate surgical procedures, cost of about $10,000 and up. The cost of a CLABSI-CURBSI episode overall is anywhere from $45,000 to $65,000. Next slide, please. So the option and what's being worked on, this drug was invented by Dr. Issam Raad at at MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. That's probably the number one cancer hospital in the world. And he's the chief of infectious disease there. And he came up with a solution, as you can see it there. It's a solution. I'll show you again how it would work. Basically, the nurse would come in and inject the solution into the catheter. This does not, I want to highlight, this does not go into the body. It stays within the catheter and the line. It's designed to sterilize and remove the biofilm, which is bacterial slime that can form on the inner walls of this catheter. Bacteria love plastic. So with this, this would remain in the catheter. The solution would remain in the catheter for 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, the nurse comes, aspirates out the contents, flushes the line, and the patient has 22 hours of uninterrupted IV flow. You do this 5 to 7 days in a row, and that line is completely sterilized and clean of anything. All this drug has is three ingredients: minocycline, which is the antibiotic, sodium EDTA as a chelating agent, and ethyl alcohol. Next slide, please. So we went to the FDA with our phase 2B data. We have worked out with them a protocol for the phase 3 trial. And it's an it's a failure-driven protocol. So the events are time to catheter failure. So and what that means is that's when the catheters fail for because of the infection, because of the solution. So the comparison here is comparing our solution to an antibiotic lock solution that the hospital sometimes brews up or makes up in the event that the patient can't is unable to have a remove and replacement of a new catheter. So we're beyond the 92 events at this point. I should also highlight is that there have been three interim analyses of our data by an independent monitoring board. They've looked at that data three times, and each time they indicated for us that we're reaching our endpoints. Continue with the trial. So I would also like to highlight that we would have had this trial completed, but due to COVID, we were not able to complete the trial because of the fact that all the data had to be collected out of hospitals. And what happened in the hospitals here in the United States is that they were all shut down for the most part for any kind of clinical trial activity for almost 3 years. So we expanded this trial also to India to really to get it across the finish line. And as I indicated, we're just about there. Next slide, please. So here's something very important. The FDA, when we went with our phase 2B data, encouraged us to apply for something known as qualified infectious disease product. Now, what this is there's, as most of you probably know, antibiotic research on a worldwide basis, especially in the United States, none of the large drug companies are doing any research on antibiotic, nothing, zero. And some of the smaller companies that had breakthrough antibiotics in the last couple of years here in the United States went bankrupt. So what the FDA did is they set up a special program for breakthrough antibiotics called Qualified Infectious Disease Product. So the normal time to review a drug when you submit your application, your NDA, is 12 months. With QIDP, as we call it, that's knocked down to 6 months. So it's cut in half. Also, we get an additional, this is only for the United States, 5 years of market exclusivity upon approval. When you combine that with the normal Hatch-Waxman approval time, it'll be almost 10 years. So this is very important. It's almost better than patent protection in reality. It means no generic could do anything here in the United States for at least almost 10 years. We also have Fast Track, which gives us an expedited review and allows us to submit a rolling review. And we also get additional patent protection with an SP certificate in the EU. Next slide, please. Next slide. So this is, I'm not going to speak about Lymphir, our cancer drug. So We acquired this drug actually from, it's actually a license that Eisai Pharmaceutical is the one that originally got this drug approved. This drug was on the market for 3 years, but as a and Eisai won the approval for it. They as a condition of their approval, they had to agree to reformulate the drug. In order to do the reformulation work, this drug is very hard to make. They had an inventory issue, so they took their drug off the market while they did the reformulation work. When they completed it, they went back to the FDA with the data. The FDA told them at that time, you have now a brand new drug here or a new drug. And as a result, you have to do another phase three of 71 patients with 21 patients as a lead-in. That was started in 2014. And along the way, Eisai also outlicensed the drug to Dr. Reddy's of India, the big generic company. At that time, Dr. Reddy's was expanding their business by going into the branded part of the pharmaceutical market here in the US. But Eisai continued to do all the work. So what happened was in 2019 or 2020, somewhere in there, Dr. Reddy's decided they're exiting. They decided to divest all their branded products and get out of the branded business here in the US. And we basically acquired that license at that time with and it's a license with Eisai. That was September of 21. The phase three trial was completed December of 21. We filed for the BLA September of 22. As you heard, July 23rd was our PDUFA date. We or the along with the BLA filing. Next slide, please. So this is what cutaneous T-cell lymphoma looks like. It starts out really being treated by the dermatologist. As you can see, the plaque stage. When it goes into the tumor stage, it's hideous. It's got severe itching. It's a very awful disease, more prevalent in men than women. Usually appears in patients in their 50s and 60s. It is it's probably it's about 4% of all non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, as it's called. It is incurable, and any drug that's out there, including our drug, it will not cure it. It will control it up to a certain point. Next slide, please. So, what makes Lymphir so different and really is something that has great significant potential ahead is that it has a mechanism of action that is completely different from anything else in the market. It targets malignant cells at which bind the IL-2 receptors to deliver the diphtheria toxin, killing tumor cells, and then it eliminates immunosuppressive Tregs. And that's a very important aspect of this drug, which I'll cover shortly. Next slide, please. This is what the competitive landscape looks like. There are actually only two of those, three of those drugs are really active. It's like I said, about a $300 to $400 million market. Seagen, which is in the process of being acquired by Pfizer, has Adcetris, and then Kyowa Kirin, which is a Japanese pharmaceutical company, has Poteligeo. And these two drugs are the primary drugs in the marketplace here. What will happen is when our drug is approved, we will not be taking market share away from the competition. We are going to be additive to the market because of the way the oncologist practices. And the way they practice is there's no one, two, or three. They go from one drug to the next, they'll go back. They are all their goal is to keep that patient alive for as long as possible and as comfortable as possible. Next slide, please. So as we indicated, it's a $300 to $400 million market, and the pricing for this in the U.S. market will is expected to be somewhere around $300,000 for a course of therapy, and that's in line with the rest of the competition. We will not have to go out and seek separate approval for that. It'll be reimbursed and covered by insurance as well as Medicare. Next slide, please.
Hi, Leonard, you may like to wrap up if you want to answer some of the questions.
Okay, I'll wrap up. Just skip the slides. Just go to we'll cut through the rest of it. You can skip this slide also. So hold on, go back to this one here. Here's what I want to highlight real quick. So this has the possibility of being, go back to slide number 19. Now, right here, you can go to the next 20, I mean, okay? All right, so I want to highlight something here about the upside opportunity in immuno-oncology. As I said, this drug suppresses Tregs. That's important in terms of it being combined with PD-1 inhibitors, which Keytruda, which is the number one cancer drug in the world today, is being used. If you eliminate or suppress those the Tregs inside the cellular microenvironment, it'll make Keytruda more effective. There's two separate investigator INDs underway now, one at University of Pittsburgh, one at University of Minnesota. If the data proves out right, this drug is a huge will be a huge winner down the road. Now we can go just skip ahead to slide number 22 where you were. So as I indicated, we have a formulation now for hemorrhoids. It's topical. It has basically halobetazole, which is a high potency steroid, the highest potency steroid, combined with lidocaine, and we'll be meeting with the FDA to work that out. Our goal again is to license this out and sell this off to another major pharma company. It's not our market. Next slide, please. Next slide. So this is just to indicate again, as far as I'll draw your attention to the number of shares that we have outstanding, 158.8 million. We have warrants of 50 million, of which myself and Myron Hlubiak probably have about 12 million out of those. We are, I am the single largest shareholder in the company. I would like to highlight that we have about 40 million shares are held by institutions, of which 12 million out of those are index funds. We also have 60,000 individual retail shareholders. So we've got an active market. We think we're significantly undervalued at this point. And our plan is to, ultimately, is to take the cancer drug, put it into a separate subsidiary, and have that subsidiary acquired by a SPAC, and ultimately it'll trade on its own. We'll raise capital for the cancer program in that sub. Our goal is to not to have any further dilution in here for the company. When the when that separate subsidiary starts trading, we'll also at some point distribute all the shares in that to the city of shareholders. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm open for questions.
Yeah, Leonard, we're running out of time. I'll just sneak in one question from the live audience here. So he's asking if Minilock phase 3 is an event-driven trial, why are you over-enrolling if the number of events has already been reached?
The reason for that is because we want to make sure that all the patients are accepted by the FDA. Sometimes when you submit your data, if you come in right in, they may find something was wrong with one or two or three. So basically, we're over-enrolling just to make sure that everybody, that we'll have a full count in there when we submit the data.
Great. We're really running out of time for a few minutes, so I'll get you those questions after the event for a few to see if we can answer those, but I will have to let you go right now. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Gilbert, thank you very much, and thank you to the audience for their undivided attention. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.